Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here, we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, the father of the accused Appalachian High School shooter has been convicted of more than two dozen charges. NBA players blow the whistle on the Hawks' collaboration with a strip club, and candidate qualifying kicks off official campaigning in Georgia.
Getting out and working, getting out into the state, meeting people, making phone calls. It's about establishing that relationship. And in a campaign, you got to be able to raise money and you have to organize, and we know how to do both.
Today is Tuesday, March 3rd. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. The father of the teen accused of the 2024 shooting at Appalachian High School in Barrow County has been convicted of more than two dozen charges, including second-degree murder. GPB's Chase McGee has more.
The jury from nearby Hall County took 2 hours to unanimously find Colin Gray guilty of second-degree murder, involuntary manslaughter, plus reckless conduct and cruelty to children because he gave his son the rifle, allegedly used in the shooting. It's the first time in Georgia that a parent has been held criminally liable for murders for which their child is accused. Former U.S. Attorney Michael Moore says the precedent could have wide implications. Consider, he says, a parent buying their child a car.
Will that parent now be responsible criminally for essentially putting a vehicle weapon into the hands of their child should that child then kill somebody in a car?
16-year-old Colt Gray has not yet been tried for murder. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
The Democratic National Committee says Atlanta is one of five cities in the running to host the 2028 Democratic National Convention. The other cities being considered are Boston, Chicago, Denver, and Philadelphia. The DNC says they'll visit each of these cities this spring to evaluate logistics and operational components, as well as the city's commitment to democratic values. The first day of candidate qualifying in Georgia kicked off yesterday. The five-day qualifying period marks the start of official campaigning. Among those filing paperwork, Georgia U.S. Senator John Ossoff and several members of Congress, including one of his Republican challengers, Congressman Buddy Carter. In the open race for governor, qualifying candidates include Democrats former Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms and former State Senator Jason Estevez. Republican Attorney General Chris Carr also made his campaign for governor official. He says now the campaign begins in earnest.
Getting out and working, getting out into the state, meeting people, making phone calls. It's about establishing that relationship. And in a campaign, you got to be able to raise money and you have to organize, and we know how to do both.
Longtime Congressman David Scott also filed to run again. More than 300 candidates qualified yesterday. Filing closes at noon on Friday. Some of the country's most important historical documents are beginning a first-of-its-kind journey as part of the country's 250th anniversary commemoration. The documents include the 1783 Treaty of Paris that formally ended the Revolutionary War, and the 1774 Articles of Association that urged colonists to boycott British goods. These documents are rarely moved from their home at the National Archives in Washington, D.C. Yesterday, they began an eight-city tour that includes Atlanta. They'll arrive in Atlanta later this month and will be displayed at the Atlanta History Center. The Atlanta Police Department arrested 17 people last Saturday during what they called an unauthorized gathering of teenagers on the Beltline. Charges include curfew violations, possession of a handgun by a minor, and possession of marijuana. Law enforcement agencies have shut down similar gatherings at Midtown Atlanta's Atlantic Station and the Battery in Cobb County. Atlanta Police Chief Darren Shearbaum says parents of those arrested will be held accountable.
And parents who allow their children to be out unauthorized after the curfew, we're charging the parents as well. The youngest person we encountered unaccompanied was 13 years of age.
APD reports two more gatherings were planned in Atlanta, but no issues were reported.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, host of Fresh Air. Hey, take a break from the 24-hour news cycle with us and listen to long-form interviews with your favorite authors, actors, filmmakers, comedians, and musicians, the people making the art that nourishes us and speaks to our times. So listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Luke Kornet of the San Antonio Spurs has called on the Atlanta Hawks to cancel their upcoming collaboration with Magic City. Kornet says he and other NBA players were surprised by the team's decision to promote the adult entertainment club. The San Antonio Spurs Center says that allowing the March 16th event during the Hawks game against the Orlando Magic, quote, would reflect poorly on us as an NBA community, specifically in being complicit in the potential objectification and mistreatment of women in our society. The Hawks announced the promotion last week. Cornette noted that the team failed to acknowledge that Magic City is a strip club. As Congress moves toward a potential war powers vote this week, most congressional Republicans are standing behind President Trump's decision over the weekend to attack Iran, while most Democrats remain opposed to authorizing more conflict. Many Democrats argue that the president should have sought congressional approval first. For more on this, let's turn to Lori Blank. She is a clinical professor of law and director of the International Humanitarian Law Clinic at Emory University School of Law. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thanks for having me.
So on the question of whether the president should have sought congressional approval first, I mean, that's not required in all instances, correct?
It's not required in all instances, but in a case of this magnitude, I think it would be wise. I think it's a good argument that it's constitutionally required, certainly would be constitutionally beneficial. So our Constitution sets up a system of shared power in the war-making arena between the president and Congress. Congress has the power to declare war. That is set out in the Constitution quite clearly. And it also is understood sort of through long history that the president has the authority to take, you know, defend the United States against attack. So we don't have to wait for Congress in that situation if the U.S. is invaded, if the U.S. is attacked. That's not the case here. Here, I think the president absolutely should have gone to Congress and is operating outside the bounds of, you know, what is constitutionally appropriate here.
Some Republicans have argued that Iran has been an antagonist to the U.S. for decades. It's called for death to America. It's supported terrorists who have harmed Americans. What do you make of the argument that Republicans are making that Iran essentially was already at war with us before we were at war with them?
If we're talking about the president's authority, and if that authority rests on the repelling an attack on the United States, then there has to be an attack. Not something, however awful, that happened 10 years ago or 30 years ago or even 1 year ago.
Presidents from both major parties have committed boots on the ground in foreign countries without congressional approval. President Obama did it in Syria, so did President Trump. And they're not the only presidents to have done this. Why do you think there are no real consequences for presidents who decide without Congress to start wars?
It's extremely difficult for a Congress, regardless of political party, to oppose and take real steps to oppose American military operations once they have already been launched. Once the conflict is underway, the focus is going to be on the American military personnel who are in harm's way. And absolutely, that's, you know, that's a critical focus for everybody. And for Congress to, you know, refuse to fund equipment or other material that's needed for those troops is extremely difficult once they're already in harm's way.
So Congress may vote on a war powers resolution this week. What would that authorize?
Well, it partly depends on what they vote for, but I see a couple of options. One is Congress votes to authorize these military operations in Iran with no parameters, with no limits or anything like that. They ratify the president's activity. That's one option. The exact opposite is Congress votes to prohibit any further use of force in or against Iran. That would essentially set up a real constitutional loggerheads, because the president would be taking action that Congress had said no. I think what we may see more likely is something in the middle. What we might see is appropriations, which is essentially implying your support. Or we might see some type of support that's couched a little bit, right? That tries to keep this from escalating any further. And so it sets some goals for the operation, or it sets a time frame, or even geographical parameters. Congress has all of those tools available, I think we'll, you know, we need to watch and see what it is they're going to try to do and what they're able to pass.
Laurie Blank of Emory University School of Law, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
The runner who was mistakenly led off course during a race in Atlanta over the weekend is hoping the Atlanta Track Club can, quote, somehow make it right for the athletes. Jess McLean was ahead by a wide margin in the half marathon championships with a mile and a half remaining when she and other runners followed a guide vehicle on a wrong turn. This race was a selection event for the 2026 World Road Running Championships. The top three finishers qualify for the World Championships in September in Denmark. McLean finished ninth. The Atlanta Track Club provided and managed the lead vehicles. USA Track and Field, which ran the event, says the results are final, but the American team would not be officially selected until May, and the governing body would continue to review what took place in Atlanta. A new study from the University of Georgia shows avian influenza is killing black vultures in large numbers, and that can have a big impact on the ecosystem, as GPB's Ellen Eldridge reports.
Black vultures are animal scavengers largely immune to diseases in the carcasses they eat. That's how they help control disease. Now, research from UGA's study highlights the risk to vultures from highly pathogenic avian influenza, or H5N1. UGA researchers tested 134 dead black vultures from seven southeastern states, including Georgia. They found more than 84% tested positive for bird flu. Wildlife pathologist Nicole Nemeth led the study.
We don't feel these impacts until some years later when populations decline, you know, and that was some of the concern in the bald eagles because a lot of bald eagle nests failed because of this virus.
The study was first published in the journal Nature's Scientific Reports. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
A program in Columbus has begun work helping people transition from jail to life back in the community. The latest Operation New Hope unit at the West Central Georgia Regional Hospital helps people transition using apartment-style pods and customized therapy. Organizers say this reduces the number of people waiting in local jails for crimes related to mental illness. The first group of 10 patients began treatment last week. Program operators are working to fill the remaining 20 beds. Operation New Hope units are run by the Georgia Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities. Other such units are in operation in Savannah and Milledgeville. The city of Savannah has approved a resolution allowing alcohol sales for on-premises consumption on March 15th. That's the Sunday before the city's annual St. Patrick's Day parade on Tuesday the 17th. State law allows local governments to have one Sunday each year for on-premises consumption of alcoholic beverages. City officials say their survey of bars found owners preferred the 15th. And ESPN reports that Atlanta Braves outfielder Jurickson Profar is facing a 162-game suspension after a second positive test for a performance-enhancing drug within the past year. Under Major League Baseball policy, a second violation of the league's joint drug agreement triggers a full-season ban. If upheld, the penalty would sideline Profar for the entire 2026 regular season and cost him his salary for the year. Profar previously served an 80-game suspension in 2025 following his first positive test. The reported suspension also would make him ineligible for postseason play and international competition during the ban. The development comes as a significant setback for Atlanta just weeks before opening day. And that's a wrap on Georgia Today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Come back tomorrow, won't you? The best way to remember to do that is to subscribe to this podcast. You can do so wherever you get this podcast. And remember to check gpb.org/news for the latest headlines and for updates on the breaking news story of the day, the guilty verdict in the Colin Gray trial. If you've got feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.